welcome to another edition of Money Matters, show number 333. Welcome, welcome, welcome. My name is Mark Cunaberti. Today's show is number 333, entitled Capitalism, Tracking the Dow and the Repo Market. Before we begin, please be advised discussions in this show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. And the views expressed are my opinions only. They do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its staff, management, or underwriters. And remember, Money Matters is about money, as money does matter and matters money affect us all in some way or another. Whether you have a lot of it, a little of it, or none of it, it controls our economy, our country, our planet, and some way or another controls the very way we live our lives. About your money, your lack of it, or abundance of it. In short, Money Matters is about you. Well, these shows are pre-recorded because of COVID. We've been pre-recording shows for the longest period of time. Station is opening up, as many radio stations are. But my show is still pre-recorded. I usually record it the night before the show. Today's show should be airing August 5th, and it's carried on about 66 stations nationwide. When they air it, we really don't know as far as the other stations are concerned. But here, it's usually in the evening, 6:30 on Thursdays. Well, I was going to make this show last night, which would be Wednesday night, but this monstrous fire in Colfax, California, started around, I don't know what time it started. I found out about it around 2, and by 3 or 4, it was pack up and get ready to go. By 5, we were one section over from a mandatory evacuation. We were on a voluntary evacuation. So I got a pretty good drill on how to do this as far as pack up and get ready to go. Most of my neighbors took off at 4. I stayed because it was voluntary. I was ready to go. We had the cats in and all sorts of stuff packed up. All the cars were packed up. I mean, this monster was headed right for us. It was exploding. I think at 2 o'clock I saw it at 20 acres, and it exploded at 1,000 within an hour and a half. And over the horizon, you could just see this huge ball of smoke, and ashes were raining down. So it was something else. But we stayed, and nighttime came, and fires kind of shifted direction a little bit. So we were okay. So I'm actually making this on Thursday morning. Program director will probably say, where is Mark's show? Well, it is a little late, but I still got it here, hopefully. So we're going to continue on. And bless all the firefighters and prayers for everybody that lost their homes last night. There was 30 or 40 structures apparently that had went up in smoke. Of course, these fires are running through the nation everywhere in the hot areas, the tree-lined areas, the forested areas. So luckily, I didn't lose my house this time. Hopefully, I won't lose my house next time. So make sure your fire insurance is up to date and adequate because, boy, these fires are something else. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about the dirty word of capitalism today. The name of the show is Capitalism Tracking the Dow and the Repo Market. So we've got three things we're going to talk about today. The basic of capitalism, okay? Capitalism always is a bad word, but that's because people don't understand what it is. Those that are even against capitalism practice it in their everyday lives. But it's got this horrible reputation that it screws a lot of people of society. And it doesn't. Now, my opinion of it is that left unfettered, right? Left alone, capitalism does take care of most of the problems we see in a modern economy. But capitalism has not been left alone for decades. And when you screw with a system, you screw with a machine, you know, you could say, well, the engine doesn't run right. Well, the engine, when it was designed by the engineers, ran perfectly. But when you start putting a bunch of smog on it and all this other stuff, the engine doesn't start to run right. So you can't blame the engine or the designers of the engine for that. Now, capitalism wasn't really designed by anyone. It came about as a natural progression. It's a transaction. It began with a transaction between two people. Two parties buy, sell, or swap goods or services, right? I'll cut your hair. And they agree to swap the service or whatever, at a price that is agreeable to both, and the value of the transaction is kept by both. So I'll cut your hair, you give me an orange, you agree, I agree, we're both happy, and we both get something, okay? this basic transaction wasn't designed. It was like, hey, you know, it just happened to people running around the mountain and say, hey, what do you got there? Well, I got a spear. Well, I got a bow and arrow. Well, I need that where I'm going. And so they would trade it. So they basically started capitalism. The capitalism part of that is that there's no other parties involved in these two agreements. And the people that get whatever they get out of the deal get to keep what they get. I get to keep the bow, you get to keep the axe or whatever. The economic model of capitalism, again, is not designed. It's just the same mechanism, but on a grand scale with many, many transactions all over the civilization, whatever that civilization is. The transaction can be modified if both parties agree. As long as the participants and only the participants make the modifications to the agreement, a capitalistic transaction has taken place. And there's two guys, they do something, they trade something, they buy something from each other. A third party doesn't come in and say, one of you two guys has to do this or one of you two guys has to do that. That goes out of the realm of capitalism. It's just two people transacting something and they both walk away happy. Simply put, is a willing transaction between two parties to the satisfaction of all parties without outside interference. That said, in recent months, even a couple of years, really, I started studying economics in 1969, I was about 13, I got a book, or 14, my dad gave me a book. I've been asking myself if the economy is broken here in the United States, and indeed in many places of the world. But I know that as long as transactions are taking place, as long as people are getting things from someone else, which is what we have to do when there's a lot of people, right? Or just three people. You have to get something. He's got something, I want something, he helps me, I help him. As long as I know these transactions are taking place, the economy is functioning. Hence, by definition, if transactions are taking place, and they are, the economy is working. It may not be working well, but it's working. It would be actually impossible to break an economy, as people always need to procure things from one another, right? As long as you need something from somebody else, an economy, whatever it is, functions. However, it is becoming evident, as it has happened so many times before in mankind's history, humankind's history, that intervention into this basic transactional event can move an economy toward a breaking point. Now, what do I mean by that? When there is interference into this basic transaction, in other words, interference between just two people arranging something, economic distortions materialize that begin to make little sense. The distortions that I'm talking about that are interject themselves between this basic transaction between two people, it can be a natural obstacle such as weather. We can't do the deal, it's snowing and I can't get to you. But more often in modern society, it's interference by another person that's not part of the original transaction. Examples of a third party interference, okay? There's two people making a transaction, but a third party who has nothing to do with the transaction gets involved in it, okay? Examples of a third party interference would be forcing one party to accept the terms of the other. Person A has to accept the terms of person B, although person A doesn't want to. Adding or subtracting from the values exchanged, in other words, person A and person B have agreed to exchange 10 oranges for 10 apples, but a third party has come in with a gun and said, no, you're only going to get 6 apples for 10 oranges. Or demanding a subsequent value transaction for every standard transaction. As a third person comes in and says, okay, you're going to exchange 10 apples for 10 oranges, but you have to give me 3, or you have to give that other person 5. That's demanding a subsequent value for the standard transaction. Obviously, in our modern day society, the basic transaction, as we know it, is laden with do's and don'ts, rules and regulations, deductions, surcharges, fees, and taxes. A third party, usually a governmental agency, has interfered. The worth of each transaction has been altered by such additions or subtractions by the third party. And because of decades of intervention by third parties, we finally might be seeing what is start to resemble a breakage in the economy. Some may call it a tipping point. What are these distortions that we are seeing that is showing me that we may be at a tipping point? Well, we're seeing high unemployment despite businesses difficult finding workers, right? Unemployment is high, but businesses can't find workers. This condition persists nationwide. There is a severe misallocation and highly unbalanced distribution of wealth. A lot of people don't have money and a very few do. That's a distortion to a capitalistic society. And a necessity by those in control to manufacture intrinsically worthless receipts, paper, money, or deficit spending. So it's a necessity to manufacture intrinsically worthless receipts, currency, to address the problems that we have that have materialized because of these distortions. Other symptoms of distortions because of the interference into the basic transaction of capitalism is the necessity for ever-increasing safety net social programs. And this is happening despite improved efficiency throughout history in manufacturing. The promise of progress was that we get better at making stuff, we're going to have more time, and more people will be fat and happy. But the necessity today is we have to ever-increasing help people through social programs. Something has gone wrong with the promise of progress. There is a perceived need for ever-increasing regulation and taxation in order to sustain the system. In other words, the authorities now think we need more regulation and more taxation to maintain a balanced system where everybody is equal. That is a distortion. And increased violence and is unrest as a result of these economic distortions that wreak havoc on members of the economy. So these interventions cause problems, they cause distortions, they cause imbalances, they cause economic inequality, and then we see increased violence and unrest between the constituents. The more havoc that materializes, the more problems that materializes, the more distortions we see, the more these third party feel necessary to intervene even more. Plainly put, what started as a simple transaction on how somebody they transacted something between two people has something that has morphed into a transaction that no longer accomplishes its purpose. It just causes distortions, and the distortions I've just mentioned. Having attracted intervention by a host of others not part of the original transaction, which is what we've covered in the last 10 minutes, the simple exchange of goods and services has morphed into something completely unsustainable. We have to keep doing stuff to try to fix what we unfixed, what we broke by trying to improve things. What started as a working economic model, two people transacting, has moved more and more towards an unfunctional one. And the more unfunctional it becomes, the more they feel that they have to mess with it. In summary, the capitalistic economic model is nothing more than two people agreeing to transact something that's agreeable to both, and both walk away happy. And the value of the transaction is kept by the two people do the transacting. When man or woman tries to improve on this basic transaction for whatever the perceived reason, the natural economy begins to break apart as the basic transaction is interfered with. In conclusion, our economy may not be broken, but to me, we may have reached a point to be almost unrecognizable as to its original intent, which is to satisfy demand with a supply. Despite this, the interventions by those in control continue to increase, and the parties that want to intervene, the parties responsible for these interventions, is growing larger by the day. More and more third parties want to come between the buyer and the seller. What comes next is usually even more interventions to try and correct the distortions that the previous interventions have caused. In short, capitalism ain't broken. You can't break it. But it's no longer true capitalism, what you're seeing. The problems you see, it's not caused by capitalism. It's caused by the interference of it. We'll be right back with this edition of Money Matters after this short interlude.
We're in the money. We're in the money. We've got a lot of what it takes to get along. We're in the money. The skies are sunny. We'll be right back.
Welcome back, welcome back. So, you're listening to Money Matters Show 333. Part of the show was called The Repo Market. What is the repo market? Well, an interesting development has been occurring in the repo market. What is that? We have spoken about this market before. It is called the Federal Repurchase Agreement Operation, repo. The repo market is a thing, okay? The people that control this thing is called the Federal Open Market Committee, the FOMC. And when they act, they are performing open market operations, OMO, okay? Basically, the repo market is a Fed facility. It moves cash in and out of the banking system on a daily basis to satisfy liquidity requirements. When financial institutions like banks and money market funds need cash, day-to-day cash, they can borrow money from this repo facility. When they borrow money, they have to give a receipt back to the facility, and they usually deposit U.S. treasuries. In other words, a bank, Bank of Mark, needs money. I have a bunch of treasuries, which are IOUs from the Fed. Fed borrowed money from me. So I need to go back to the Fed, and I say, hey, I need cash. Here are your IOUs back. Give me cash. I know it sounds ridiculous. It is, but this is how things work. This transaction is called a repo transaction. I need cash. I go to the Fed facility. I said, I need cash. I give them treasuries, which is their IOUs back, and they give me cash. Conversely, the Bank of Mark can deposit cash. Instead of needing cash, if I have extra cash, I can put the cash in the facility, and the facility gives me my treasuries back. So I can give them IOUs and get cash, or I can put cash in and get IOUs back. So I can borrow money or loan money. When I put cash in and get treasuries back, this is called a reverse repo. It's opposite of what we did the first place. Not everybody can use a repo market. You can, I can't. The financial institutions that are authorized to use the facility, we have agreed to keep a stock of treasuries on hand and cash on hand. And the feds keep treasuries on hand and cash on hand so we can swap things back and forth, okay? Think of the repo facility as a huge octopus handing money out and taking money in daily. It's called overnight. So they're overnight loans for the most part. The financial institutions use this facility to fund my day-to-day operations. I don't have enough cash. I need some cash to pay my bills tonight. So I take some money out or whatever. The feds also use this facility to help steer the economy. So not only do the banks use it to get money, the feds use it. If they want to get more money into the system, they go to the banks and say, look, you may not need money, but we want to give you money. And when I give you money, that money goes into the banking system, and the banks loan it out, hopefully, and it goes into the economy. So the feds use it to put money into the economy when they want to heat it up. And they also can take money out of the economy when they want to slow it down. They take money out by they going to the bank and they say, by the way, you have too much cash or you have cash, I want some of your cash. So call in some of your loans and I'll give you treasuries. It takes money out of the economy and that slows it down. Now, why would you want to speed it up and slow it down? You want to speed it up. You want to hit the gas on the economy when the economy is ailing, like during COVID or 08 or 09. We want more money into the economy. So we go to the banks. We say, here's, take some money. Give me the IOUs and go put it into the system. If I want to slow the economy down, if I want to break it, right? Breaking the economy, slow it down. I go to the bank, say, give me some cash that takes money out of the system, and I give you IOUs back. So they want to break it. If inflation gets too hot, the economy speeds up, inflation starts to take off, prices start to rise, they want to slow it down. So the banks need it to get cash or park cash, and the feds use it to slow down or speed up the economy. When the financial institutions park excess cash at the facility, they do a reverse repo. They earn little or no interest. So if I give the feds money and the feds give me IOUs, I'm the Bank of Mark, I don't get any interest, or I might get just a little bit, but it's a safe place to park my cash, because if I got a lot of extra cash, I can't put it in the bank because I am a bank. So I got to give it to the feds and the feds will keep it for me. They'll guarantee it like a big bank for a bank. Keep in mind that this facility, this repo, is a very short-term and overnight facility. It's only described as overnight. You can only put money in, take money out overnight. There are exceptions to that. But for the general rule, it's just overnight money going back and forth. When the financial institutions need funds and therefore are borrowing cash, they use the treasuries they own as collateral, as we mentioned. Okay? So then if you're a bank and you take money out and you give the IOUs to the feds as collateral, you have to pay interest on the money you took out. Okay? So if I'm going to go to the feds and say, I'm going to borrow money, here's my IOUs as collateral, the feds are going to say, okay, you're going to pay some interest rate on the money you're borrowing. That's called the repo rate. The feds can jerk around that repo rate. They can increase it or decrease it to encourage you or discourage the banks from borrowing money or parking money. If they lower the rate, it makes money cheaper to borrow, so the banks will borrow it and speeds the economy up. If they raise the rate, the bank says, oh, okay, I don't want to borrow money. I want to put money in there because I get more money back, so it takes money out of the economy. During 08 and 09 and early on in the COVID crash of March 2020, and during other times when the economy or markets have faltered, there's usually, and there was, more money borrowed by the banks than put in. So usually the banks are borrowing more money than putting in when things are bad. They need this because they need the money to weather these stock downturns. During the high withdrawal periods, the feds sometimes have to pour more money into the bucket to satisfy the cash. So generally, the repo market operates on its own. Bank A puts money in, Bank B borrows money out. And it operates without any help from the Fed. When the markets get stressed, the feds have to dump more money in, okay? They go by the name of asset purchases, but just think of it as the Fed pours more money into this repo market because more people are taking money out than putting money in. In 08 and 09, they then said, well, you guys only have treasuries. That's the only collateral we will take. But now, since you have a bunch of bad mortgages and even bonds, which are just IOUs from companies and such, we'll also take those as collateral. So that was kind of out of the norm for them. Normally it's just treasuries, but then they said, nah, you got all these mortgages in 08 and 09, so we'll take those too. We'll take in some of your crap. Some say that the relaxation of these collateral requirements by the Fed went beyond their mandate, but of course we'll talk about that another day. The point is here is usually the repo market operates in some sort of balance, meaning it requires no new money or interference from the Fed. There's so much money going in and out, it kind of operates on its own. If the repo market does require assistance, it says, hey, we need help, it's usually because there's a shortage of cash and they have to add more. And we see that during 08, 09, during COVID. When things get tough in the economy, more banks are taking money than putting money in. And so the feds have to add cash. And they are indeed, we're adding cash through 08 and 09 and other times when the economy's got upset. Rarely, very rarely, does the ebb and flow go the other way, meaning these banks and institutions that are authorized to use the Fed seldom deposit cash into the Fed on their own. And if they do, not for very long. In essence, the banks usually always need money and seldom have an excess of it, okay? Not so in recent months. Rarely have we seen this. Financial institutions seem flush with cash, and they have parked nearly $500 billion into the facility. And more is coming in every day. This is a change from normal, and a change from a few short months ago when the repo market was being subsidized by the Fed. Now the repo market is seeing the rare event of having too much cash put in from the banks. Theories abound as to why all this money is coming in from the banks, but it is showing that the banks have a lot of money right now. Why do they have a lot of money? Theories range from Fed stimulus programs to unemployment checks to consumers apparently going on a spending spree with their checks or as the economy opens up. But the amount of money that has been dumped into the repo market by the banks has been very, very large. Why? We don't know. Banks seem to be doing fine, which means that the economy, or at least the stock market, seems to be doing fine. Whether the people are doing fine is another story. Either that or we could have a plethora of IOUs that the banks have that they just want to get rid of. But in my opinion, that's probably not what's happening. Whatever the reason, if the repo market is a bellwether for stress in the financial system, I'm not talking about the consumer, But if the repo market is a bellwether for the stress in the financial system, and it is, right now, because a lot of money is going into the repo market from the financial institutions, it's saying that the banking system, at least up until a few weeks ago, is doing just fine. We'll be right back with the rest of Money Matters in just a minute. Stay tuned. And welcome back to Money Matters. You're listening to show 333. And we were going to journey into another version of what I wanted to talk about, which is why hasn't my stock market portfolio tracked the Dow? But we're running out of time. So there you go. So I guess we're going to have to end the show. We're going to have to say that you have been listening to show 333 on Money Matters. Yes, you have. And this is a reduced program. All the programs now of Money Matters are 29 minutes or so because of the COVID restrictions and things of that sort. We've kind of knocked the show down to a half hour for now. We hope to go back to an hour, but with the Delta variant rising, we don't know. So just like to tell you thanks for listening. Remember, discussions on Money Matters should not be construed as specific recommendation or investment advice. Okay? The opinions mentioned here are my opinions only. And are not a solicitation to buy or sell anything. And in no way does it necessarily reflect the opinions of this radio station and staff members or underwriters. Okay? Our website is moneymanagementradio.com. It's totally free. Our way of saying thank you for listening to your community radio station. And as a disclaimer, I hold California insurance license OL34249 and I'm a Medicare agent approved in the state of California. Thanks for listening, take care, and be safe.